What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles. Made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast. But one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio, another Adventure Unknown member, the great and powerful Jason Fry. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you. We're really excited to be here.
Yeah, Jason, really excited to get to know you here. I mean, I've seen you around the club a lot and we've gotten to talk a little bit, but I really haven't gotten to, I've been kind of saving a lot of questions to ask you for this. So I'm excited to get to know you. So for the people out there that don't know you, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Man. Where to start? Father, number one, number two, husband, and number three, Team Jesus all the way. So those are probably the three most important things. I've been coaching over 23 years now. So in some way, shape, or form, we've been focused on helping serve other people.
Awesome. Wow. What kind of coaching? It's your 23 years.
23 years. Whether it was skill development for basketball, it was coaching basketball, or now it is coaching leaders and businesses on how to improve the overall line.
Awesome. What's the name of your company?
Mine is Roundtable 5.
Roundtable 5.
Yeah, so we focused, that's kind of the umbrella piece, and then the healthy leader is my baby. You know, it's this, how do we improve your leadership and make it healthier? That's been the focus. Everything we do is in leadership. Regardless of AI, regardless of any position, leadership exists. And so we got to really, really focus on how we improve the health of that.
So is it just about leadership, or does it go deeper than that?
Goes deeper than that.
Okay.
Relationships, to me, leadership is fully functioning. It's everywhere you look. Whether the things are going wrong or things are going right, you're going to find it as a result of leadership. You know, your health, your actual physical health is a direct relation to how you lead. Because if you can't do it right or do it consistently, it's going to be really difficult to be a great leader and to be a great dad and to be a great husband. So that's like, how can I improve health, mental health, all of that? And then so I can become a better dad.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're a manhood, fatherhood, how do you think that those roles have changed? And do you think men are being set up for failure today?
I think that's a yes, no thing. I think there are certain areas where we're seeing it develop and it's actually growing. But I also think that there's a ton of areas that, you know, we spent the last 10 years demasculating men. And we're coming back out of that piece. And so I think that you're going to find it in many, many places where it was a direct correlation to a lack of a man being present. And whether that's crime, whether that's some of the issues that are happening with mental health, it's directly related to men not being able to be men.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of the stats today. I mean, what was the one? It's like suicide amongst men under the age of 30 is up 40% since 2014.
Yeah, it's like as many men have died from suicide as women have died from breast cancer. I think that was the yeah. correlating, or like the same amount. It was like very, very close, which is just crazy.
Yeah, so when you hear a stat like that, what do you think is it that, you know, that's missing for these men that's causing them to feel like it's better to just commit suicide than
Well, let's look at our military operators. I have the deepest amount of respect. I work with some right now. They're leaving a title, a position, I am a warrior. This is what I do. I'm leaving this identity, and I go and I transfer out to civilian world. And I don't think that's the piece that they're missing. They're missing that camaraderie. They're missing the brotherhood that they used to have, and that's the piece. So it's not just, oh, I don't have my identity, I can't shoot, move, and communicate with anybody, but it's the fact that I can't do it with my brothers. And so I think that community has been something that's been frowned upon. A true friendship between two people is frowned upon between two men. I read a stat a couple months ago, and I keep bringing it back up to people. And it's 72% of men don't have somebody to call on in a time of crisis. Like, that's scary that they have that. It's scary that's the reason why the suicide rate is as high as it is. I don't feel like I don't have somebody that I can call. And now I'm in oh crap mode, and the pistol's there, the whatever's there. And I just want to talk to somebody. I don't have somebody. I don't have that person. And so that's what's missing. So it's this, you know, F3 has done a phenomenal job. CrossFit did a phenomenal job during that time frame because they built community. And so we're just missing these places for community where men can be men. Men can share things. It's one of the few things that men don't have a place to go and vent. Men don't have a place to go and communicate how they feel. And that's also just something that's frowned upon. Hey, you're supposed to just suck it up, grab a straw, and keep moving forward, when that's just, I mean, that's just not how it goes or it needs to go.
Now, why do you think that, I mean, what do you think would stop people from joining a community or group? Like, why do you think there's so many men out there that don't have someone to call on when, you know, I guess maybe they just don't know that that's the what's making them feel that way? Or what do you think?
We're all wearing masks. You know, there's a lot of men out there. I have done it personally. I have been in this. I allow ego and a mask to hide what I want to do. You know, some don't know where to look. That's a big issue. Some just don't. There might not be a place for it. You know, there's online platforms, and that's a great way to do it if we're in a different city. My buddy, my mentor, Nick Lavery, Green Beret, still active duty, 18 years. He's the first ever amputee above the knee to go back into Special Forces.
Oh, wow. Wow.
The only one. So they completely had to rewrite everything for him. He started something called The Forge. Well, it's the same thing. Everything from mental health to physical to everything in between, from head to toe, how to do life and how we can grow and get better. And it's just like community. It's messaging. It's all this stuff. So I think that there's not enough of those being able to be marketed. There's not enough of people to know about it. So it's just not loud enough. This place, you know, Adventure Unknown is one of those places where we have this. There's still women, so I don't want to say a brotherhood, but we have a community here where everybody wants to get better. Everybody wants to help serve somebody else. And so the more of these can get marketed, the more people can talk about it, the more people we can bring in and then hopefully help serve.
Yeah, that's a good point, because like I think about it now, like, you know, you hear about a lot of baseball players when they get done with baseball or they're out of baseball, and you hear more so from the high school guys than the college guys. But you know, they fall into a deep depression. There's quite a bit of suicides amongst former minor league baseball players or professional baseball players as a whole. You know, and I always thought it was more of like an identity thing. They tied their identity to baseball. Like everything they were was baseball. But now it makes sense too, because like, I mean, you ask me what I miss most from baseball, the first thing I'm going to say is hanging out in the locker room and all the shit that we would talk about and stuff like that. You know, that's one of the things, like, you just miss that team. Mm-hmm. And being with those group of guys in the trenches, battling on the field and in the weight room and all those things, like, that makes a lot of sense that it's more so the community aspect and the brotherhood aspect and having that team and support system than not. Yeah. And so, no, that's a good point. Interesting point.
I mean, it's one of my favorite things about jiu-jitsu, yeah. You know, is just all my buddies, you know, just going there and hanging out with all the guys, beating the hell out of each other. And then, you know, we're all buddies, and, you know, we sit there on the side of the mat afterwards and, you know, talk about whatever. I mean, you could talk about jiu-jitsu, we talk about life, we talk about anything. It's just, you're just being around a, you know, a group of men and women, really. I mean, we have a lot of women at our gym as well, but I mean, you just connect with people. And I think that there's something about going through tough things together that really brings people together. You know, I felt the same thing when, you know, with my pledge class and my fraternity, like, we had a, you know, pretty tough, like, our pledge ship was really hard. And like, we had it was a full semester of, you know, bunch of all sorts of shit. But, you know, if I look at going back to when I played football, I mean, I was not a great football player by any means, but like, I just love being a part of the team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wrestling, same way. It's just like, I love being a part of a group and feeling like I'm working for something that's bigger than me. And I just feel like I'm a part of something. And I just think, if more people found that, I don't think that there would, I don't think the suicide rates for men would be so high.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think having that is always a very important factor, but we have to look at other factors. You know, some of these people, they allow negative thoughts, right? So they allow the negative thoughts to sit and then get set instead of just sitting. So like, if we think of concrete sits, and then it hardens and it's set. Like, you can't do anything about it. And a lot of people don't understand that their thought processes are exactly the same thing. It's okay to have this negative thought. It's okay to have whatever it is that comes across through your head, but you can't let it set. And a lot of people don't have ways to not let it set. What, like, a cue word. If I allow this negative thought, I think of myself as a shitty dad. Just because I could have done so many things better. And so I am always constantly thinking of, oh, I'm a crappy dad. I let this happen. My kid thinks this, and so blah, blah, blah. I feel this way. But if I allow that to set, then I'm in trouble. But if I can have something ready, and I say a statement that it's ready when that thought comes in, then I can move the needle. Then I can get past whatever it is. And a lot of men don't have that. They didn't know that these thoughts actually control the actions control the habits and all this stuff. And now I have a discipline or a consistency of negative thoughts going through my head and then not doing anything about it. So then it just repeats the process. And then it makes it harder to not pick up the gun, to not pick up the drink, to not pick up the pills. It makes it really difficult. But if I can train myself, write stuff down, use we call it a dope journal. So it's a data of personal experience. So that the Marine Corps, that's their sniper thing. So the snipers all have a dope journal. And it's like data of past.
Sorry, what's the acronym again?
DOPE, D-O-P-E. I
mean, what's it stand for?
Data of past experience. Data of past experience. Okay. Something along those lines. So I took it and I just said, okay, it's personal experiences. And so I reflect in it. So I call it a dope journal just because nobody's going to go, dude, it's a diary. So no man is ever going to go. I write in my diary.
Yeah.
So I don't want it to be that. Call it logging. The military calls it logging. We'll call it writing in a journal. I call it reflection. And so then I can go, you know, this is my mantra. This is what I say when negative thoughts come in. So it's in my personal belongings at all times. I can look at it. If I'm ever struggling, boom, that's what I'm doing. So I think a lot of men don't have that. So we're looking at ways to process the mental, the emotions. And then not having that community, if we can get those two together, we're going to really be able to do something.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, Now, do you think everybody can be a leader, or do you think, you know, some people are just born for it, or do you think it's just something that, like, obviously I think that's kind of a nature and nurture thing, but do you think that just some people are more cut out for it than others, or what's your thoughts?
I think everybody is a leader. They're just either really crappy at it, or they're developing, or they're getting better, or they're getting better, or they're a good leader, or they're a great leader. Leadership's one of those things. Is like protein. If you don't use your protein at the end of the day, I mean, it's gone, you know? So if I don't gain it, if I don't eat it, then there's no, like, my body doesn't save it. Like, it saves carbs and fats, right? So it's the same thing as that. And so if I don't use it, then I'm going to lose it. And I don't, like, let's rep it type of thing.
What are your thoughts on, like, the books that Jocko Willink has written? Discipline Equals Freedom, Dichotomy of Leadership, things like that. One of my favorite quotes is in those books, like, my action or non-action as a leader is always going to have some sort of consequence, good or bad.
Mm-hmm. I love Jocko. I had the pleasure to meet him.
That's nice. Awesome.
I think that, everybody should read Dichotomy first, and then Extreme Ownership, because Extreme Ownership, they end up going to the extreme, and that's not that's not leadership. So he talks about in that book of finding that balance and then being able to lead better from there. I think that those books are phenomenal. I think anything that addresses where I'm at and then gives me a, like, GPS, I'm here, where do I want to go? Okay, what does that look like? And then now we can actually frame out how I can improve as a leader. So Jocko's phenomenal. What they do, how they do their leadership, cover move, is phenomenal. Echelon Front is doing an amazing job, and we're hoping that our team at Team Machine surpasses Jocko at some point. But just like anything, as long as there's more people focused on, hey, we want to help leadership, I want to improve my leadership. My kid is a leader. Your kids are leaders. You are leaders. Everybody is, because somebody's following your example. Somebody is. It doesn't matter if you're a French fry maker. Somebody's following you. And so I just think that if the more people thought about how that was framed, then, like, man, we just have better experiences with one another. We'd have better leadership. We would better have better accountability. We would have better disciplines. And it's just not seen enough, right? Somebody told me once, it's not taught, it's caught. And so leadership is exactly that. People don't give a shit about what you say. They give a shit about whether or not what you say lines up with what you do. And then that determines whether or not you're worth following to them.
What's the one leadership failure that people make that they don't realize they're making?
It's the same thing as fatherhood. It's the same reason why I claim I'm a shitty dad. It's just that example piece. You know, I think a lot of times we negate the why. And so it's tell your kid something, and then what did mom, dad say? What's because what I said so. You know, that's not leadership. And I think that that's probably the thing that's causing us to be hindered as parents, to be hindered as leaders, is I have to have this place where I can tell them what the why is first. You know, you brief somebody, and as a coach, you sit there and you tell your team, hey, we're doing this. But you don't explain the why. You don't get the buy-in. Like, that's from coaching, from playing. You know, hey, this is the scouting report. This is what this person is doing. This is how we're doing it. But the scouting report is explaining why we're doing what we're doing. And a lot of times we don't have that as parents. So we're not giving a report on, hey, clean your room. Clean your room. Why? So every kid wants to know why, and it's not just them being an asshole. Mm. It's them going,
trying to learn.
I want to know.
Well, we're in that stage right now. Yeah. Let me tell you, everything's why.
My dad used to just say physics. Why, Dad? Why physics?
Oh man, I'll start using that one. Yeah, because it's, hey, Dad, why is it dark outside? Why is it snowing? Why is it this? And it's like, dude, am I really going to sit here and explain
science, buddy?
Yeah, science. I was like, science. Well, the sun, it's spinning around, you know. I was like, well, the earth is spinning around the sun. And I'm like, wait, why am I starting to explain this? He's not going to understand it. Yep. You know, like he's not even three. So you've coached a lot of people. What is one common trait, you know, that you can see that determines, you know, the successful from the unsuccessful?
The first thing that comes to mind is probably the focus on the basics. You know, those guys, the reason why Jason Tatum is who he is and why he's so good is because of the basics. It's because of his ability to just go, okay, I'm struggling with this. And so he would look like when he would shoot, he would just be focused on his balance hand staying straight. And that was his only focus when something went off. So it's like one of those things of how, my ability to know what my basics are and then my ability to execute those basics. When a coach loses a big game, that's the first thing that they'll say. We got to get back to basics. So a lot of times we're just losing this idea of what's the most important thing right now that I can do, and does it align with the foundation? And if it doesn't align with the foundation, then I'm focused on the wrong thing. If it is, then it's a basic. Let's sharpen it up. And so you'll see, you know, there's a reason why Tatum does form shooting every time he walks onto the court. Not just for discipline, not just for habit, but because that's a basic for him to get what he needs to do, how he needs to shoot, how he needs to break down his shooting. And so I think that it's just, it's one thing that we neglect. We look for shiny, we look for sexy, we look for, hey, what's the most popular thing? But if we don't have basics, it doesn't matter. There was a skills coach, he coached Kobe Bryant. And it's his first day with Kobe. And he says, all right, Kobe, I got this move. So he's like, kur, 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 pop, 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 and then shoot it. Kobe's like, what was the first step? And so he's like, well, you got a jab. Got it. So he'd do 50 jabs. Boom. Get into the shot. Boom. Get into the shot. And then what was the second step? All that. Okay. So he would jab and then go into the second step. So it's one of those things like the best in the world, we can argue it, the best in the world legitimately broke that down and went 2 hours before he did the actual move that that coach had suggested. That's why the greatest are the greatest, is because they're going to break it down and go, okay, what can I do? What can I do? What's first step, second step, third step, and just keep going. And I think that that's what we're missing a lot of the times, is we just went too far away from what that basics need to be.
It's because we're in that era of very immediate gratification. You know, no one wants to take the time to learn things. They just want, I want it now type mentality. So as a leader, you know, you instructor, you've mentioned, you know, we've mentioned Jocko, you've mentioned Jason Tatum. Who are other leaders that you look up to, or is there anyone non-obvious that you would recommend?
My boss, my mentor, Nick Lavery. Outside of him, you know, we have talks often. So I'm constantly trying to learn from people who move my needle. So I look at my circle. And so, those two, Jocko, Nick, are big timers for me. But I also look at different people who are really successful in different areas because I want to grow. And I know that I want to learn from somebody who's a master car salesman. Because he's got different things, like there's different skill sets. And so one of my buddies, one of my mentors, is a master. He's one of the best sellers in the world at car selling. Hmm. One of my partners, a business partner on my healthy sales leader, is Carson Heady. He's one of the top sellers of Microsoft out there, period. So I want to get different avenues and learn from different people on leadership, on how they communicate. Because a great seller can communicate unlike anybody else, because that they're telling some type of story and you're believing it, you're buying it, you're doing something that moves you in order to buy a car, and you're still fighting this person's belief that you're a snake, right? So there's got to be something in there that's doing that. And so Marsh Bice is one of them. He's the car salesman. And then Carson Heady is my market Microsoft guy. So those guys are people I really lean on. And they provide me excellent forms of leadership and then just ways I can learn and get better.
And what are some of those things that you've learned from them?
Patience. the power of almost not speaking. A lot of times we want to immediately say something to somebody and they're only giving you a tidbit, and a great salesman, somebody like them, will let you go all the way through and let there be a complete pause, almost to where it's awkward. But if I can do that, then I can get everything out of them and I can truly learn their perspective and then move from there. A lot of times I'm only getting a piece and then I want to be like,
yeah,
and then say something right away because you're like, I've got that answer.
Yeah.
Well, my job really as a coach is never to provide an answer. It's to provide you with the ability to find the answer. That's what a coach is. You want a consultant, you want the answer, hire the consultant that can tell you exactly what it is. But that doesn't help you. That just gives you the answer, like that instant gratification. Hire more consultants. But hire a coach if you want to end up learning the processes on what to do. And so that's one of those, like the pause. How can I actually let them reset? Because the pause does that. How do I let that reset? And then how can I kind of extract what they just said in that 3 seconds?
Oh, man, I totally agree with that. That's something I think doing this podcast has helped me do, because it's like I immediately just want to say something or respond to something, but I'm like, no, he's not done. Keep it going. Like, he's got more to say, you know, before I butt my head in, you know. Just like, you know, it's definitely something.
Bite your tongue.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's definitely... I think I totally agree with that. What would you say being a father has taught you about leadership?
I think that's probably the greatest form of leadership, because they're truly watching
everything you do.
They're watching everything you do. You know, like my kid.
How old?
I've got an 18-year-old and I have a 9-year-old.
Okay.
So the 18-year-old, he's trying to move. He's moving out. He's like, hey, I got the world. I know how to do things. Okay. So I'm letting him learn that. But the 9-year-old, like, somebody will cuss. Somebody else that's not inside our house will cuss. And we both look at each other. And we come back and he's like, we don't say that. So I think that's one of the things that we have the ability to actually teach. And teaching is more demonstration than it is saying. So being a father just allows me to be able to either teach him that or me learn something as a result of my failure. If we look at my failure as a father with my 18-year-old, I took over dad duties at 3. That kid is mine. And as I raised him up, I raised him as mine, like 100%. And then when my little one was born, I had listened to my brother-in-law, and he had told me that it's totally different. Like, as soon as you have this one, it's going to change your world. You're going to see things a little bit different. You're going to treat him, big one, a little bit differently. And I let that get in my head, because guess what? I did treat him differently. And that's where I suck as a father, was because I learned that it is different when it's your kid. When that blood, when you watch them be birthed, it's totally different, that feeling. And it's not fair to him. It wasn't fair to him that he got the short end of the stick. So I think being a father really taught me the importance of diving into, you got 5 kids, diving into each kid, finding a way to spend more time with each one of your kids in their settings and not yours. Mine was always my setting. We're going to be in the gym. We're going to go to the basketball court. That's where we're going to be. But that wasn't his setting. And I think that's where I sucked. That's where I screwed up on being a father, that taught me, if I have a team, if I have people, I need to meet them in their setting and not mine.
It's great.
Great, man. I love that. Well, you know, if we threw you into a room with a bunch of young men and they don't have any role models, where would you start? What would be the first thing you'd teach them?
I I think two things really come to mind. Probably understanding where they want to go. And then grace. To get where you want to go, you have to screw up. To get where you want to go, to achieve the dreams, we call them big-ass goals, we call them bags. To achieve your bags, you have to go failure on top of failure on top of failure. To get the one hit, you've got to fail 7 times to get your 3. And that's MLB All-Star, right? So that means everybody else who's not an MLB All-Star, you're failing 8 times, 9 times. And so with a group of men, I would understand, hey, it's really, really important to know where you want to go. And some men don't. There's 30-year-olds. There's 40-year-olds. They don't know where to go, and that's okay. But the things in your life, we would end up finding this circle, finding a pattern of great things that you enjoy, great things that you want to do, and finding this way of creating a goal around that piece. Because once you find that purpose, then you can move, you have the ability to move forward. You have the ability to know and get this bag and go, okay, I know where I want to go. But then understand that as you go on this process, you are going to fail. You are going to suck. You're going to be probably the worst in the room, and you have to be okay with it. You have to be okay with failing. I learned from my guy, Nick Lavery. So he loses his leg, and one of the coolest things that most people don't know is that he ended up building a gym in his bed. So like in the hospital bed, right? So loses his leg, surgery after surgery. He builds a gym of different TheraBands and all these other things. And his very first thing, he couldn't sit up. And so his goal was, okay, I gotta sit up. If I'm gonna get back to the teams, I gotta sit up. And so it was like rep after rep after rep. Well, you're failing rep after rep after rep. So he got to the point where he could do the sit up. Then he got to the point where he could do this. And then he got to the point where he could do that. He'd got all this training to go overseas and to actually perform as a member of the team. But there was one part, there was one, I'll botch it, some type of vehicle that they got to get into. He didn't rep or prepare for that vehicle.
Oh, wow.
So he's going in, and he did it, and he struggled to get in. And I mean, he freaking struggled to get in. He's like, I can't, my team can't allow this. They won't allow it. I can't allow it. I could get them killed. So then he's like, that's his only focus. So now it's, how do I F up? He F up 1,000 times just trying to get in. And then he got it. So boom, now he got really, really good at being able to do that. And I think that for men, we have got to be able to do this thing where we can accept the failure that we're, because we know that we're trying to be better. If we know that we're trying to be better, science does show us that we will immediately grow faster because we're open-minded in the fact that failure brings us closer to growth. So those two things would be mine.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, I think the biggest thing that's helped me is learning, especially with baseball. I mean, all you do is, you mentioned it, all you do is fail. Learning how to take that failure, turning it into a lesson and moving on from it has been huge for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will tell you this. My 9-year-old sucks at that job. Like, he is terrible at failure because he does not like it. And I do think that it's probably somebody else's voice, because I'm extremely accepting. I'm reminding him, hey, you've got to fail. It's okay to fail.
I think that's do you feel like that's a learned response, or do you think that's just something that's innate in all of us, that we're all super competitive and we don't want to fail, but we don't know how to fail yet, and that's something that we have to learn?
I do think that is a key thing. It's just hard as a father to see.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my 6-year-old's the same way. Same way. Hates losing. We'll even change, like, we'll be playing basketball. He will go and change the rules of basketball to favor him. Like, yeah. Dad, you make a basket, it's -2 points. until until it's the score's back to like, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. He goes, yes, it does. And then he'll be winning. I'm like, all right, I'm winning.
Makes sense for me.
Yeah. He's like, all right. And he's like, all my baskets are worth two and yours are worth one now. So I'm like, what? But like, that's how, because he hates losing. He's not a good loser, which I want him to keep his competitive edge. But at the same time, teaching him those lessons and teaching him how to learn is going to be a process. I mean, shit, I didn't learn it until I was in high school. You know, it was middle school and learning those failures. I mean, it was one of those things where I'd fuck up on a baseball field and it would eat at me. Next thing you know, I'm out of the game and I haven't even made it out of the first inning yet. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some things that you're working on, or what do you plan on working on with your son to help him teach, to learn those lessons?
Put him in a position where he doesn't win.
Okay.
I don't want him to win. And we had this discussion the other day. I'm going to kick your butt. Like, my goal is for you not to win, so that when you do, it means that much more. And you understand what the process was at doing that. I will put him up against better people. Like, I want him to go against all our members here in pickleball. And I want him to go against, you know, really, really good basketball players, really, really good soccer players. We put him in a league we probably shouldn't have in terms of soccer. But he's actually a lot better than I thought. And so he's playing with good kids now. And
he's keeping up.
They know what to. Yeah.
Well, you rise to the level of your competition. I'm a true believer in that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if, you know, if you want to get better at whatever it is, go find where the really good people are and join them. And it's going to be, you know, do or die. You're either going to sink or swim. If, you know, if you wanted to get better at jiu-jitsu, go join a really tough gym.
Yeah.
And you're going to get better, or you're just keep getting your ass kicked.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with, I mean, and I think that applies to everything. You know, it's all about the people you surround yourself with.
Yep.
And, you know, everybody, a rising tide raises all boats.
It does.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, let's look at it from your perspective and flip the script here. Okay. And you guys tell me what you would do with a room full of kids.
Whew. Man, you want to go first?
I got to think on that one for a second.
I was like, so do I. Man, I would... Yeah, I think it would be, you know, like you said, I think figuring out where you want to go is the ultimate, you know, the very first thing, because it's like, okay, how can I direct you if I don't know what direction we're going in? So, all right, well, what is, you know, if there's young men out there who don't feel that they have leaders, or, you know, I would say, I think finding a community and finding something that you're truly passionate about and something that is very difficult to succeed in. And I think that you can learn a ton of lessons from that. You know, whether it's sports, or whether it's fitness, or whether it's painting, or whatever it is, or whether it's playing music, like, find something that's really difficult to do and something that's going to just require a lot of your patience and time and effort, and something that you can work on every day. You know, like, I wouldn't say, you know, if you're in the middle of Missouri and you want to get good at surfing, like, it's not a good idea. Like, that's not realistic for us here. But, like, if you wanted to, you know, get good at, I always go back to jiu-jitsu. But, you know, if you wanted to get better at, be more confident, get better at, you know, your ability to defend yourself, or, you know, it's ability to defend yourself, but it's also a great fitness. I mean, it's going to get you in one of the best shapes I think you can get in, and you're going to surround yourself with a bunch of great people that have gone through a ton of adversity to get to where they're at. And that's, I mean, and I think that would just help them. That would be one of my first things I think I would suggest is join, you know, figure out what you want to do, something that's realistic, something that you can do every day, and something that you're going to improve at over time. And it's going to be like building a mountain out of layers of paint. You're going to slowly get better over time. You're eventually not going to suck, and you're going to see that you can get good at things, and you'll find some self-worth from that. At least I know I have.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I would start with their why. I would just, everybody's got a reason for something, to do something. And the problem is most people don't have it tied into your why. You have your saying that you put in your dope journal. What is their why? So I would just sit there and continue to ask them the question. I would ask, first off, like, what drives you? What are you passionate about? And then I would just continue to ask them why and why and why and why until we got to the very root of what their why is. And then once we're there, we're formulating a plan around that why to get them moving forward to basically instill that why into their heart. And that's the passion that they do everything. And because I think once you have that passion and drive for something, you're able to do anything you want. Mm-hmm. Absolutely anything. Like, you know, if you don't have it, why are you, you know, you're not going to want to do anything. Like, I don't want to play basketball. I'm not a basketball player. Mm-hmm. You just go throw me out there and try and tell me to go shoot hoops. I'm going to go tell you to kick fucking rocks. Like, that's not me. Like, now if you tell me go play hockey, like, I love hockey. I can go back to why I want to play hockey, why I love it. It's my thing. And you throw me out there and tell me to take 100 slap shots, I'll do that, no problem. Baseball, same thing. But, like, finding that why would be, for me, that would be my first thing that I would do with a group of people. Set them down and just continue to ask them why. Mm-hmm. Why is that your favorite thing? Well, why does that happen? Where, you know, just continue to ask until they get to that thing, and then they have that passion and drive, and then you can move forward with them. Mm-hmm. So break them down mentally, and then help them build up from there. Once they get their why, the next thing is building up their emotional intelligence. I think that's one of the most important things as a true leader you have to have. Everybody, you know, you can be smart, but smart people have low EQs, but I haven't met a single person that has a high EQ that has a low IQ. Mm-hmm. So building up that emotional intelligence, making them aware of their emotions, making them understand their emotions and understand their feelings is what I would do. Mm-hmm. And helping them control that. That was, again, baseball. I relate everything back to baseball just because that's, I mean, shit, I just had an interview today with a magazine about this. And they were asking why baseball players become successful in mortgage lending and insurance sales. And we just dove into it. I mean, the biggest thing is the mental hurdles and the emotional hurdles and all that things that come with baseball that just help us as baseball players become more successful outside of it because we're trying to, because we're good at handling those things. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Figuring out your why and then building up the emotional intelligence would be the first two things that I did if I was thrown in a room with a group of people that had no mentorship or leader.
That's awesome. So, both of you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, obviously we've kind of brought it up a couple times now. Like, I think society is suffering from a leadership crisis. What do you think is the root of that?
There's a saying, I believe, about, what is it? Tough times make strong men.
Yeah.
Strong men make easy times make weak men make strong times, right? So I just think, number one, we're in that time frame. I do think we are in the process of getting out of that piece, but I mean, you've got to go through some lows in order for you to develop and to move your needle in terms of leadership. We've made some poor decisions probably in leadership where certain things have become acceptable, and that has only hindered the process. We talked about like instant grid.
Like what? Yeah.
I would say anywhere where, like, we're talking about bathrooms.
Okay.
We're talking about allowing people to do, I think we taught that a lack of consequence occurred when you have your own say. There is freedom of religion, there is freedom of speech, but we forgot and we negated that there is a consequence for what you still say. I'm allowed to say what I want, and I understand that, but I also understand that somebody else can have a differing view and then pull their money out of my business. They can do that. I think what we did was we negated that there are consequences to that. Hey, you're allowed a voice. Hey, scream it as loud as you want. You're also, don't worry about the fact that other people disagree with you, or if they disagree with you, screw you. I can't believe that
silence
you would ever
them.
Do
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably been the biggest thing, is that we're not understanding. My 18-year-old is not understanding that he believes a certain thing and I should automatically agree. That doesn't work in this world. And there has to be grace still. Look, I accept the fact that you don't agree, and that's okay. And so I think that what we didn't do was we didn't say that we just did this thing where you're divided automatically. And I think that that's probably the biggest thing in leadership where it creates division. and I can't see your perspective if there's division.
Well, the communication aspect of everything is gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and, you know, we talk about this a lot, you know, the rise of independent media, because there's no biases within that. You know, we're basically stating, you know, what we're hearing, what we're seeing, but we're not biased to one side or the other. But like, people are so tied into the media nowadays, like, that's where their news is coming from. And it's basically like picking the biggest pain points out from each side and throwing them to the other side to make them hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I mean, I've got a friend in California that I talk to pretty frequently. We both have completely different views. She's a Democrat. She sees things that way. I'm moderate Republican more so than anything. But we've had great conversations. We've always have had great conversations. And it's just one of those things where it's like, we can agree to disagree, but we still have civil conversations and we don't mm-hmm. fucking hate each other because of it. We just understand the difference. Like, really, cause we're trying to get to the same thing. We just have different ways of getting there.
Yeah.
Wanting to get there. And I think that's the problem, is people hear so many different things on so many different sides that they're just real quick. Well, I don't like that, so I fucking hate that person.
Right.
And I think that's bullshit. Like, communicate, have a conversation, be civil. Like, you're going to, you know, it's okay to be different. It's okay to have different views and different thinking, but have the conversation. That communication is key, especially when it comes to leadership. You know, in my mind, to be a good leader, you have to effectively communicate, which also means you have to effectively listen. And so I don't think there's a lot of that going on anymore. And so it's been sad. And because this kind of leads into that, like, that's all happened within the last, really, since Trump first got elected.
2016.
Yeah. So what are we at? We're at 8 years later now?
Nine.
Shit. Fuck. We're getting old. Holy shit. So it kind of leans into that. You know, what's something about leadership and development that you believed, you know, 5, 10 years ago, that's now different as the world's changed?
That's a really, probably that there is no right.
Yeah.
There's zero right. Like, what is right today in 10 years is probably going to be wrong. Yeah. So that's something that I actually have eliminated from my family. Like, we don't use absolutes. And we don't say right, because chances are your right and my right are two different rights. And
it's a subjective thing.
It becomes subjective. And then later
unless
on,
you're talking math.
Objectively, we find out.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to find out. And so I think that once I eliminated thinking that I was right or thinking that she was wrong, it doesn't matter. Like, that's not the piece that we need to be focusing on. It's how do we get into this together? And I, you know, if we can do that, then we've got a really, really good chance. So no absolutes. So never. Like, really?
Yeah.
I always wake up at 4 a.m.
Do you? Always?
Always?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean?
I sometimes wake up at 4.
Yeah.
So it's by accident to go pee.
Yeah. And that was just something that I had really learned, that I was using a ton of absolutes, and I try my best not to do that. And so I have my family call me out when I do say it, and I call it out.
Do you have an absolute jar where you gotta put a dollar in every time you say an absolute?
We should. Yeah. Or we could do that. Yeah.
Swear, yeah. Instead of a swear jar, an absolute jar.
Yeah. That's good. I like that. If you had to define manhood, how would you define it? Kind of a tough question, I know.
It is tough. I'd probably put it at the same thing as leadership, and that's probably consistency. Manhood is extremely subjective. Showing up is a big thing for me, and it's probably one of the hardest things that's missing, is that men aren't showing up. And if they do, it's a lack of presence. I'm there, but what am I doing? I'm on a stupid phone sending a text to somebody that doesn't matter, when my kid matters, when being a great husband is what matters, when being a great leader is what matters. I'm still trapped into this idea of taking away my presence. And so from a manhood standpoint, that's really hard to say what it is, but consistency and presence and being able to understand, who am I talking to? What is my objective? What is my intent in whatever it is I'm doing? And hopefully that creates the manhood that I want. Because like we just said, you know, subjective. Manhood is hard. There is zero book on manhood that works, because that's their thing, their moments, everything their parents taught them, everything their grandparents taught, their parents taught them. Like, that's a situation for somebody else. And so manhood is just the hardest thing, because there's no one thing for manhood.
Right. And that's, so I had this conversation last week with somebody, and we came up with like six or seven different things for being a man. And I'll dive into those in a second. What characteristics do you think a man has? What are those characteristics that make a man?
Great listener is definitely one. Great communicator is two. Consistency is three. Four would be, it would go along the lines of, with consistency is a focus on the person, is a focus on me. Because if I don't wake up, I have to wake up early, because I have to serve everybody else the rest of the day. I no longer can serve me. I can no longer go to the gym at 3 o'clock. So I have to wake up early so that I can focus on me and pour into me. And I would say that piece. So if I don't have that piece, I can't be the man that I want to be. I can't be the husband. I can't be the dad. I can't be anything if I'm not pouring into me. The other thing is coachability. If you are a man, you have to be able to be coached. And that means I have to take feedback. I have to give feedback. I have to be able to hear hard things. And for a man, that's probably a really difficult thing right now. And so that's another one. I think that was five. Six, I would say. I'll just say six. Humility. I should probably put humility as number one, but humility is definitely one where, guess what? I screwed up. I messed up. And if it's too close to the chest, then I won't admit it. If ego's involved, I won't do it. But humility has to be in there for a man to be a man.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, humility is something I think a ton of men struggle with, whether it's physically, emotionally, like, I definitely think that
it's an ego thing.
It's an ego thing. Yeah. I mean, I think we're all, you know, we all think that we know the best, or we think that we are the best until we find out that we're not. And it's time to, you know, take a slice of humble pie and choke it down.
Well, yeah. What are some of the characteristics that you think make up being a man, or manhood?
Oh man. You know, I would definitely agree with Jason on a handful of those, like, especially with consistency, humility. I think the ability to protect and provide, those kind of being two separate things. Yeah, and then your just ability to be, I think I would go into the other one that he said would be, coachability, your ability to, you know, accept feedback and then go and apply the lessons you're learning. Mm-hmm. I think those would be my things.
Yeah. I mean, same. Protect and serve, or protect and provide. Strong emotional intelligence. Not just intelligent, but strong emotional intelligence. Like I said, I always say, if you're highly emotionally intelligent, then you're going to be intelligent. You can't have high emotional intelligence and be stupid. It's just not possible. So high emotional intelligence, the ability to regulate and understand your emotions and control your emotions, I think first and foremost is the number one thing for a man. How are you supposed to function as a person? How are you supposed to protect and provide if you can't control your emotions in any situation or understand your emotions? Mm-hmm. Because as soon as something unravels, there goes your emotions. There goes your ability to protect, provide. So first and foremost, your emotional intelligence is on point. and you're in tune with your emotions, you understand your emotions, and you've got those, you've got that ability, which then allows you to provide and protect your family. Two or three or four, you've got your strong in your morals. So your morality is in check. Your values are in check. Those are all things that you have in place, and you live by those values. You live by those morals. You know, everybody's different, but you know, I believe in a higher power. I'm not religious by any means. I'm not going to sit here and say, everybody's got different beliefs. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different ways that you can believe and look at it, but I've always had and felt that my morals, values, and ethics, you know, they coincide with what the Bible says. Do I believe what the Bible says as actual word of God? No, I think it's a great way to form a foundation for life. And that's how I live my life. And that's how I want to teach my kids to live their life. I want my kids to have strong morals, ethics, and values. But then also, you know, in terms of that, you know, being like you said, humble and coachable, that's the ego, having that ego in check, but also at the same time, letting that ego come out in terms of, you know, hey, pride, taking care of family, protecting, you have to let your ego shine in those moments. But at the same time, which this ties into the EQ part of it, the emotional intelligence, but also being humble enough and emotionally intelligent enough to bring that ego back into check when you know you're out of line. You can be humble by certain things. You're still able to be coachable. You're still able to want to grow each and every single day to be better, and that you're not sitting there on the sidelines being satisfied with where you're at. You have to be able to continue to push forward, continue to grow, continue to get better. Favorite book, Atomic Habits. We talk about it a lot, but getting 1% better every day, whatever it is you want to do. You know, if you've got multiple aspects of your life that you're trying to improve in, you're getting 1% better in each of those things. And you're passing that message along to your children because they are the future. They are passing your message along, and you don't want to pass along a shitty message. I want my kids to be better than me when they're older. I think my kids are already better than me based on stories, and not just stories, but things that I've heard from other people about my children. And that's the best thing that I could want as a father and a man, and that I'm doing everything that I've done as a man to continue to pass. I was asked, if I were to pass away today, would you be happy? Obviously, no, I'm going to miss my kid's life. I'm not going to be happy that I died, but I could die happy knowing that I've done everything that I need to do as a father and as a man to raise my kids and put them in a position to succeed and be better than me moving forward. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel is a man. So
it's great. Yeah. I love it.
That was good.
Which also can be a leader.
Yeah.
Leadership. I mean, it all ties into the same. You don't have to be a man to be a leader, but a lot of the same aspects of being a man requires to be a leader. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So how would you personally measure success? Like in your own life, has that changed over the years, or what would you define as successful?
I always put whenever, always.
There he goes.
Dollar.
Whenever
get
I,
it in there.
Yeah.
But it is true. Whenever I say success, I'll put it in quotes. Whenever I write it, I put it in quotes because determining what success looks like is really, really difficult because I'm winning a big game. I've seen somebody go, okay, well, we want to be district champs. Great. Success looks like for us district champs. So they win districts, but then they were just so focused on what success looked like for district champs, they lost the very next game to a team that was worse because they only had a prize on one thing. So I think success is probably more so on the ability to achieve something but not be satisfied and to continue going, to have ever-adapting visions or bags, right? So I accomplished this bag, but the second I accomplish it, that bag's over, and I got to go to this next thing. So I think that success is always changing.
That's a moving target.
Always.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
And
sure.
So, that's really hard answer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But for me, I don't ever want to say what a success would look like. What a success looks like is me in heaven and seeing my kids in heaven. That's what success looks like. And everything else, you know, if I had a chance of God using me for somebody to go, then terrific. Like, as long as I'm living the way according to the Bible. As long as I'm living the way that I feel I'm called to be, I personally, that's a personal success, then that's the only thing that matters. The other successes of getting the $200,000 a year job, success, great. But there's always a then what, now what. There has to be something that's always moving on growth. There has to be some type of challenge that's continuing to grow. We climb mountains. We do leadership events, and we take people up a mountain. I'm always a believer that I'm going to come down from that mountain, and I'm going right back up another one. And so I just want that mentality to continue so that success is almost never reaching, because it's going to continue to allow me to push. Heard an interesting thing yesterday. I'm on the phone with Nick, and the Celtics sent Nick, because Nick did he did coaching and consulting for Joe Mazzulla and the Boston Celtics last year, past couple of years. So Joe sent him the banner, right? And it's got all the players' signatures. Super cool.
That's
thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's real
cool. And he sent it to him. He said, "Well, you got yours, Joe?" Joe says, "Yes." "Where is it? Where do you have it framed?" "I don't have it framed. It's in the tube that it came in. It's in the garage. Because I don't want to see it. I don't want that to make me satisfied that I see it. I want it to put away so that I have 13 more to get. So that I have the next one to get, whatever it is." So I love that mentality too. It's just like, I don't want to see it. Like those platinum gold records or whatever it is, you know. We were watching Saturday Night Live the other day and the cowbell thing. And yeah. So platinum gold records. I don't want to see those. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so I like to look at it in a similar view that I don't, whatever success looks like, that's fantastic, but I got to keep moving.
It's perfect.
It's great. Yeah.
So you work with a lot of different teams and organizations. What separates the high performing ones from the average ones?
Team. Like, it is 100% a team thing, and there's not an individual that is higher than the team.
So the ones that work as a team.
Yeah. You know, like, what's the mission? The mission is we get to hear. So no matter what, if you as an individual are keeping us from getting to there, like, that's not okay. So I think that the separators, the people that do that, are the people that are the low-end people, the ones who will never see that success. Those people allow the non-winners to stay. They allow a complainer to stay. And they find out, and there's no reflection. There's no immediate feedback. In winning teams, if I recognize that you're doing this, we're going to immediately have a meeting and we're going to discuss it. That's where the winning teams do. The losing teams will wait until 6 months down, and then here's your six-month review. And I'm telling you something, you screwed up 6 months ago, 5 months ago, and you're like, "You're telling me now?"
Yeah.
And that's the difference between the great teams. It's like, hey, we got to address this immediately. This is not aligned with the mission, the vision, the values. Address it. And if they continue, cut them, get rid of them, let's move forward. And I think that that's probably the biggest difference. It's just they understand mission, vision, values better than anybody else. And then they don't let anything detract them from staying on mission.
That's possible.
That's great.
I feel like that can be applied to literally everything in life.
Yeah.
So
cut out the cancers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's next? What are you building right now that excites you most?
I don't cuss a lot, but I started a brand called Do Hard Shit.
Sweet.
And my mom doesn't like it. Some people would wear it and then be like, "Oh, we can't really wear this in church or at school to pick up the kids." But
initials, DHS.
DHS, yeah. You know, and Department of Homeland Security. So we're good.
Yeah.
But the whole premise is that everybody's going through something hard, right? We discussed it earlier. Men are going through something hard. The single mom is going through something hard. So the idea behind DHS was that you can keep going. Like, you have it in you to do something phenomenal. You have it in you to do something great, and you just need to keep going. So DHS was a literal reminder of keep going, keep pushing. Like, you can do it. You're strong enough and perfectly capable. So I wanted everybody to know that. Like, mom, business owner, athlete, you have this in you to be unbelievable. I truly believe that everybody has it in them. I mean, if we're made in the image of God, we should be able to do some amazing things. But we just forget, or we don't believe, or poor me, something happened. I got this emotional baggage in my life. I had this trauma, and that's keeping me from doing something. So it was a way to celebrate people, too, who are going through hard stuff, that we could remind them. You know, my brother, one of the focuses of this, of DHS, was my brother has a kid with special needs. He just turned 14. He was born with hydrocephalus, which is fluid in the brain, swelling in the brain. And so, you know, their vision was that Brady would walk one day. He's 14. He isn't, like, he's in a stander if he's going to walk. So it's really, really difficult for this achieving. My brother still picks this kid up and puts him from bed to the bathtub. It's hard. So my brother is doing hard shit every day. His wife is doing hard shit every day. There are tons of parents out there who have kids with special needs. They're doing hard shit. So this idea was just keep going. You are a beacon of light to somebody. And if you can keep going, if you can keep pressing, if you can keep pushing, then you've got a chance at doing something amazing and telling a great story. And so we're doing leadership events. So everything that we do, we're hosting one next month at Adventure for Leadership, is that developing yourself as a leader is hard shit because it really hits home first.
So what kind of hard shit are you going to have them do? Or is that a surprise?
The leadership series is hard because it is working on you. The other events that we do have like a ruck challenge that we're going to do. And the ruck challenge is going to be with terrain and with altitude.
Okay.
So now you're getting...
So where do you do stuff? Like, do you guys travel for things like this?
We're going to do one in Colorado. We're also doing, for a do hard shit, we'll do 7 days, 7 summits in Colorado.
Oh, cool.
Which will be in August because there's less snow up there. I don't do snow on top. So I don't... In the summertime.
Come on, do hard shit. Let's go.
It is hard shit.
It's hard.
Do even harder shit. Do
harder shit. So we're going to go do 7 summits, and a lot of that money is going to go to my brother and his foundation, or if we find other foundations, we can help serve them too. So it's kind of like, how do we do that? So at least quarterly, we will have events where we are going to do some really difficult things. That we actually have one where we're talking about carrying a humongous boulder, you and your dad, father and son, and they got to go a mile.
The old Cameron Haynes rock challenge.
Yeah, something similar to that. Yeah. But you just got it. You have to do it for the full mile. So if you get really tired, pass the rock, like pass it off. And it's a great analogy for everything in life. It's going to get hard. I have to rely on somebody else. And when I'm done, I just have that realization that I just did something really difficult and I can do it. I'm so much stronger than I thought I was. I'm so much more capable than I gave myself credit for. And so we're going to have a couple of those coming up.
That's awesome.
That's great, man. I love it.
Well, it's been awesome having you on here and hearing their story and hearing about you know, what's going on with Healthy Leader and everything like that. Anything else you want to pitch or throw out there before? What you want to talk about that you've got coming up at AU? What's that?
That is our leadership series is going to be 12 months long.
Okay.
And so you're going to have the ability to come for 90 minutes and we focus just on you, the entire group. It's an interactive thing. It's not me talking for 90 minutes because nobody wants to hear that. But it's you working on you. And all I'm doing is guiding along the way. I view myself as a Sherpa. So when you're climbing Everest, The Sherpa gets no credit. Great. He carries all your shit. He tells you where to go, how to be successful, who takes the picture at the top. Sherpa takes the picture. He's not in the picture. That's perfectly fine because I need you to be successful. I need you to get to the top of Everest. And so that's the focus of that, the entire 12 months. We build you out from individual to how to effectively lead a team and then to how to effectively lead your entire organization so that all three of those get encompassed in that 12-month time frame. We do it from a 90-minute session every month, and then we also do homework where that homework, should you choose to have that package, you get homework every week, and then you get daily accountability.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We can always surprise you with one last question at the end. We call it the tombstone game. Here lies Jason. What's it say on your tombstone?
Hopefully it says loving father and husband.
Perfect.
And if it says anything else, that'll be up to them. It's not up to me anyway, so.
Right.
I hope that's what it says.
Perfect.
It's perfect, man. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you could, please click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below. And we will see you next time.